You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. This evening, we're going to do a little bit of a rejig into how we present our show. This is because in another show on Agenda Awani, I interviewed two very important, prominent ladies, Professor Suk Yung Kim, as well as Izan, the founding CEO of Cendana. In that interview, we discussed not just about the upcoming event by the Cendana event called the Cultural Economy Forum, but of course the whole cultural phenomenon of how we can try to see how Korea, for instance, did their multimedia and entertainment business and how we could possibly emulate such kind of conversations here in this country. It's also important to note that while there are a lot of similarities and dissimilarities pertaining to the cultural phenomenon of Korea as well as Malaysia, what's most important here is that a lot of things can still be done even if we don't take it point for point when it comes to development of the arts and culture in Korea. Some of the conversations that I asked from Professor Kim, it does involve on the issues of whether or not the hyper visibility and the hyper-commercialization element of the K-drama, K-pop, is going to affect the youth as well as the society there. So those are the kind of conversations that we might continue to have further and develop further on this show. But for now, enjoy my conversation with Professor Suk Yung Kim as well as Izan, of the founding CEO of Cendana. Enjoy. Maybe we can start with Izan. Let's talk a little bit more about the Kuala Lumpur Cultural Economy Forum, or the KULCEF, a little bit of background into it before we jump to other questions.
Sure. So actually, KULCEF is a Kuala Lumpur Creative Economy Forum, and it's a follow-up from the, you're right, in the sense that it's arts and culture discussions last year. And this year, we are having it on the 14th of October. The idea of KULCEF is also to make Kuala Lumpur cool with different conversations and activations as part of art in the city. But the forum focuses on discussions with the private sector, the corporations, government, and the wider industry about how we can galvanize the nation via the creative economy agenda. So we will be having a lot of local and international speakers, like Professor Suk Yung Kim, Lord Ed Vasey, who's for the former UK Minister of Technology, Communications and Culture, Jason Beaven, who's the former creative director of Warner Brothers Studios and currently heading up Content Creator Studios. He's involved in Lego movies, Joker, Inception, Conjuring, and of course we have Pak Ridwan Kamil, who is the governor of West Java, Indonesia, and has done amazing work in Bandung via creative economy.
Could you share a little bit about AITC and the relevance of this?
Sure. AITC, or what we refer as Art in the City, is a yearly campaign for Cendana. We are a unit of Micreative Ventures, and we sit under MOF, and we report to Ministry of Communications and Multimedia Malaysia. And because the sector has been closed since last year, and now we've opened after 18 months, we thought it would be appropriate for us to reactivate the sector via a campaign called Art in the City for three whole months that offers forum, city festival, a media art exhibition, open arts classes taught by the best industry players to the wider public, all for free.
You know, we can now ask Suk Yung, because the cultural phenomenon of Korea pops and arts and movie culture is actually quite staggering. Last week, Ted Sundaras of of Netflix, he's the co-CEO as well as the chief content officer there, boldly declared that the biggest movie that they have ever, or the biggest TV series that they've ever dropped, is actually a Korean TV series or streaming series in this sense. Do you feel that this is a long time coming, that the fact that Korea has built a long and steady march towards a really vibrant arts and culture, particularly in the film festival area, is actually crucial to actually sharing your experiences with us at KULCEF?
Sure. You know, nothing comes out of nothing. And as you point out, I mean, the staggering success of Korean cultural industry that we see today has really, it's coming from a long history of coordinated efforts by the government, as well as really hardworking, you know, industry labor force. And the fierce competition that sort of defines the Korean society in general. So all of these factors have been really created reputation for Korean cultural industry. And I think the kind of the current phenomenal success of Netflix show Squid Game that you referenced is a kind of result of Korean cultural products' happy marriage with global streaming platforms. So just like K-pop just somehow blossomed into this global phenomena when they kind of got onto the YouTube platform, I think K-drama is entering a new phase of another global sensational boom with the marriage with global streaming sites such as Netflix. So, you know, I think it's really important to give a lot of creative freedom to creators of cultural content. And in the case of Squid Game, the kind of elimination of traditional censorship that comes with kind of domestic TV dramas is a key factor that really enabled its rise to top of the Netflix global charts.
Well, I find your statement just now quite interesting, or the phrase, nothing comes from nothing. If you reference back to the Squid Game, the creator of it, the writer, actually took over 10 years in the creation of it. He was you know, going through a lot of hardship and trying to make it happen. And the trials and tribulations story is actually quite similar to not just K-film or K-TV series or K-pop. It's the same elsewhere. The significant factor here is that the support that has been garnered, not just from the private sector, but from the public sector as well. And in this sense, a lot of government intervention from the Korean, South Korean government actually enabled him to persevere, and not just him, and other creators in this space as well. Do you feel that it is actually essential, in fact crucial, for the public-private partnership to continue to support the arts and film culture?
I believe that private and public sector partnership is really crucial and defines kind of unique you know, ecosystem of Korean cultural industry. But I think those two sectors have very different role to play. Mm. You know, the government's role should not be to control what content should be produced on a thematic level by imposing restrictions or certain directives, but just to enable the infrastructure of digital economy to thrive. So in the case of Korean government, I mean, what it has really done to enable the current success was to bring in digital economy and digital transformation at a really kind of early stage of, you know, the history of IT, globally speaking. So, you know, as early as 1998, the government initiated a campaign called Digital Korea, where it was very determined to avail high quality gadgets, you know, personal computers, and very reliable internet infrastructure to the whole population. And also, let's note that Korea is a really high density urban area. It's 70% of population live in this high density urban area where it's really easy to bring in those digital infrastructures. So what government really did well was to enable those conditions through which global platforms can be easily accessed so that, you know, Korean cultural industry people can have kind of, you know, window open to them. And another thing is that Korean government is really relying on export for its GDP, you know. Korea is a very export-driven economy. So this mentality that comes with we have to sustain our economy through exporting our goods has expanded to cultural economy, the intangible, you know, cultural products such as music, entertainment, whatnot. So I think the government is really awakening to looking at culture as something that they can produce well for the global audience and export, just as it has done with semiconductors, automobiles, so on and so forth.
Izan, do you feel that Malaysia is at the cusp of embracing this public-private partnership? Do you feel that our government and the relationship that it has with the private sector could actually blossom the way South Korea did?
Wow. Well, South Korea is ahead of us, I think, in terms of a lot of these conversations. And definitely we have aspirations to move the agenda of pulling together the content creators from both creative side and arts and culture side to be made for a global audience. I think when it comes to animation and film and gaming, we have that sector of Malaysia that is really moving towards a larger market. But for the arts and culture segment, we do have high quality works, and certainly it's something we're trying to promote and transition to other markets and supporting the industry where needed. But certainly the private sector does play a very important role. At the moment, when I look at data and the sort of funding we provide in terms of investment into the communities, 92% of it comes from the government. And 8% comes from the private sector, which signals to me really that there is a bigger role for the corporates to play. And we need to, as a government, see whether the policies and incentives we have at the moment are sufficient to pull them in. And if not, what do we need to do? Yes, I think we want to move towards that, and certainly that is our goal.
Structurally wise, when we talk about investments into funding creative endeavors, it's a combination of private equity money, a combination of grants, taxation, tax credits and the likes. This requires a lot of modeling with the Ministry of Finance, with the tax department, for instance. Do we have the wherewithal to get it done in order for us to actually get more money into this space, not just by, you know, enticing private money, but you know, creating a conducive environment where we can actually get more money and you know, more investors to actually look at this space as a serious investment opportunity for them?
That's a very good question. And I think that's how we want to try and slowly shift the conversation. Because I think at the moment, because of the pandemic, it's a lot of rescue conversations. It's trying to stabilize the sector because 97% of our communities are negatively impacted because of COVID. So it's more of the grants that are being provided for and the loans that are being provided for are low interest rate. A lot of grants, we've just approved $22 million to benefit the wider arts and culture community to sort of stabilize themselves. And I think as we move into 2022, I'm hoping also with the budget 2022 that'll be announced soon, there will be a sizable allocation for us to work with to assist the communities to grow. So when we talk about growing, of course, investment, grants, tax credits and incentives are all very important, but also at the same time to get the private sector, like you said earlier on, involved, we also need to make sure that the environment that they're investing in is also appealing to them, not just from a social inclusivity element. There is some sustainability, it's spillover economy that potentially this segment can provide, and certainly the indicators that Prof. Kim will be talking about also on the 14th of October will be something we'd like to perhaps see and borrow even into our modeling of what could work and what could not work.
Yeah, Soo Kiang, I want to draw that attention to you as well, because I'm sure we are all familiar with how deep Netflix pockets can be. But at the same time, there's a lot more developments in K-pop and in K-drama that is not touching at all Netflix's money. Do you feel that that kind of structural change needs to happen when it comes to enabling investors to, you know, jump into this space and invest? How is it done in South Korea when it comes to this area?
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to really big budget productions, such as producing BTS's next album, so on and so forth, I would say that the role of private sector is everything. I mean, there's hardly any intervention from public sector because, I mean, K-pop, as you know well, is really a part and parcel of hyper-commercialized world. So BTS's management company, HYBE Entertainment, for example, just recently went public. And with that kind of public offering, they were able to raise funds to create their own global platform. So kind of enabling the migration of this enormous global fandom of BTS to use their own platform is another business strategy that will increase the profit profitability of their own corporation. So I think the model for K-pop industry, for example, is to really start from grassroots level fan buildup. And they create this global traffic of tweets, you know, YouTube posting commentaries, and investors notice those numbers. So I would say that K-pop industry, at least, is truly playing by commercial rules rather than you know, having dependence on government grants or public sector's kind of assistance.
That was our conversation with Izan Satrina, the founding CEO of Cendana, as well as Professor Kim. We'll be going for a short break. When we come back, we'll continue with this conversation with them. Thanks for staying on with us. Continue on with my interview on Agenda Awani with Professor Sukyung Kim as well as Izan Satrina, founding CEO of Cendana. Enjoy. Maybe Sukyung, we can pick up from where we left off just now before the break. Private sector involvement, the way you put it, is playing a huge role from this. Do you feel that this could be further enhanced following this event, the CoolSAF event? Do you feel that the private sector needs to sit up straight and see what's happening in this space, at least in Malaysia?
It's certainly my hope that this event will inspire private sector to turn their eyes to the potential of culture, because it is not just commercial commodity that we're talking about here. It's really about the making of national image, which has so many trickle effects in all sectors of economy. So in the case of Korea, I mean, there is such shared notion among public that culture is not only an item that could be exported and traded, but it is something that contributes to common good. And in this sense, kind of establishing shared value amongst its people and kind of enhancing the national soft power. And as a result, economy can benefit from it. Of course, it's a really long-term investment, and the results might not be reaped immediately, but I think we cannot ignore the power of the kind of enhanced national image that can increase tourism, you know, flow of students to study Malaysian culture. So I think it's a project that should also subscribe to common value and the importance of it. So I certainly hope that's the case.
Izan, do you feel that this is an opportunity for us to use the words of Sukyung, enhance our national image, create some sort of or shape out the image of our culture, and of course think about how we can strengthen our national power? These are long-term investments, you're right. No money will be seen in the near term. But the dividends, if you're looking at this in the long term, is actually quite huge. Not just about financial, you know, might and investment into this space, but just generally supporting the arts and culture in Malaysia.
Well, I am a strong believer that part of the role of arts and culture, it does lend an enhanced soft power to the country. And I believe Malaysia has a diverse and very rich history in terms of its arts and culture, its stories, its history that it's able to connect Southeast Asia and beyond. And perhaps it is something that we need to consider using to our advantage in terms of creating that bridge of connection with other markets and other countries. And certainly when that's done, of course, business can take place.
People like to intertwine business with politics or security with politics, i.e. Military with politics. But people don't normally associate arts and culture with politics. Do you feel that this could be an area that Malaysia could be thinking about in the near term, the way South Korea has actually developed that kind of relationship where, you know, they've projected their soft power of politics through arts and culture?
I think that the question about arts and politics, politics shouldn't come into the space of the arts, if at all. And it's my personal opinion, for the arts to flourish beyond what the industry is doing in terms of restructuring to create a conducive environment. There are needs a political will to do that, and also to follow through. With the current ministry and the government in place, there is that interest and there is a commitment. And hence why I was saying I'm optimistic that there will be a nudge and push towards fulfilling these aspirations that we have for this industry. Of course, at the end of the day, we must not forget the creative industry in totality. The heartbeat of this industry is arts and culture. So whilst we are talking about a hyper-commercial industry, we must also not forget about the dreamers and the writers who come from this heartbeat of the arts and heartbeat of the creative industries, and ample support and enablement should also be provided to them.
Sukiang, the final few questions that I have with you is regarding the direct correlation between the economy of South Korea and how it has contributed to the GDP when it comes to the arts and culture scene. We are, of course, for the past few minutes talking about Hallyu wave, the Korean wave, so to speak. Where is the direct correlation when it comes to improving the economy of South Korea via arts and culture? Are there any tangible numbers that you can share with us to a point where we can see the correlation and perhaps try to mimic or emulate or at least be inspired from and perhaps try to develop something of our own here?
Sure. Since Korean culture is so hyper visible in today's world, I think we generally tend to overestimate the economic contribution this cultural sector is making to the entire economy of Korea. But if I can share numbers, it only accounts for 2.1% of entire South Korea's GDP. So the export figure of these cultural products such as music, IP, film rights, whatnot, only account for 2.1% of South Korea's entire GDP. So this, in a way, tells me that the game has just begun. So this is just the tip of the iceberg. And more things will come in the future with the current strides that Korea is making. But at the same time, cultural industry is not just limited to content, IP, you know, film rights, but it is really about kind of promoting certain type of lifestyle. So in this figure, it actually, what should be included is export of fashion items, export of cosmetics, export of food. And those figures are not included in this 2.1% of the entire GDP. So those are very hard to gauge in terms of how much influence did Korean culture have on export of those kind of lifestyle items. I mean, those are very hard to kind of measure by certain clear metrics, but but industry people know about this. So for example, you know, CJ Entertainment in South Korea, I mean, they openly promote that we're not just selling music, but we're actually selling Korean lifestyle. And it is no wonder that the company has such a thriving, you know, kind of food subsector under its wing. So in a way, there is much broader impact to be made. And I'm feeling very hopeful for Korea's future economy when it comes to what culture can contribute to it.
The final part of the question is actually quite tricky to manage, actually, which is, of course, because of the hyper-visibility and the hyper-commercialization element of K-pop and K-film and K-drama, there seems to be, I'm sure there is a tone that it a toll that it takes on the society of Korea. Do you feel that that part is actually only beginning to look at, and the kind of conversations that need to be had is only beginning to be had right now?
Younger, there is a generational difference when it comes to the question of what kind of price is the whole country paying to support its cultural industry. And I should share an anecdote that a few years ago, there was a public commercial on Korean TV saying that we don't need more K-pop idols. What we need are scientists and mathematicians and engineers. So I think the older generation tend to be a bit worried about how hyped up Korean culture is at the moment and how much talent from young people it is really attracting. And that, you know, being an entertainer has become a kind of endorsed path to success in Korean culture. But at the same time, younger generation is really looking at it as a path to success and path to having a voice to global audience. Mm. But because that creates such fierce competition, the human toll it takes on younger generation is enormous. And the dark side of Korean music industry is talked about, but we don't really get to see the visceral kind of suffering and the problems that these young people who don't make it to become huge stars have to suffer for the rest of their lives. So this has become a social issue. I hope it continues to be debated and discussed, not just brushed aside. Because in my view, for Korean entertainment industry to really succeed globally, it has to create socially responsible entertainment. I mean, nowadays, global consumers are not just overlooking what goes behind stage. Just like, you know, consumers care about where your food comes from. They want to consume products that were ethically produced. And I think that same mentality trickles to what kind of entertainment they consume. And that is a kind of irreversible global trend that we're seeing.
Absolutely. So, I have a 14-year-old, and she's extremely, I guess, attuned or sensitive to things being sustainable, things being created in a way where it doesn't harm others. And it's a value that I do not possess myself, and I'm starting to learn from her. I think it's the whole, and of course, I still want her to be a lawyer, doctor, engineer, that kind of stuff. But you're right, she wants a global voice. She wants to reach out to the mass via arts and culture. So it's a very, what you're saying basically hits straight home, is what I'm trying to say. But we can't change this. It's a reversible cultural trend. But we are really running out of time, and I apologize to you ladies for the short of time. But Izan, if people want to learn more about KoolSAF, where do they go to? How do they get the tickets? How do they attend?
Sure. It's 9:30 to 5 p.m. You can register via baskl.com.my. It's on 14th October, and it's free. It's a really engaging day, and we have it once a year, so don't miss it.
That was our conversation with the folks from Cendana, as well as Professor Kim of UCLA. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astroawani.com. Look for Notepad over there. You can also find us on all our social sites. Until then, thanks very much for watching, and goodbye.